off last night's romp in Seattle, Ducks in Pullman. The game on Saturday televised on the Pac-12 network. Our next guest will be behind the mic calling the action. He has an incredibly unique resume of anybody in this business we've had on the show. His Twitter handle at Seasons on the Fly. We welcome in Greg Heister. Greg, really appreciate your time. Great to have you on. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here.
So I was reading an article about you from just over 15 years ago on a website called Inside the Kennel. At the time, you'd landed the play-by-play gig for Gonzaga. Now, I'm a Jersey boy. I know you're from about 70 miles south of Buffalo. And it was funny because the story said you planned on being an architect, but in high school, a mock presidential debate altered your course. I need some details there. Which candidate were you and how did that go?
I was representing Walter Mondale and in the presidential debate in which, you know, Ronald Reagan went on to be our president. But you know what it did was give me the performance bug.
By the way,
it was kind of intoxicating, and so and I had a love of sports, and I loved Kurt Gowdy growing up, who was the great play-by-play guy, kind of a super broadcaster guy. He was also the host of the American Sportsman television show. So, I kind of replicated my career towards that, wanted to set out and do outdoors television and also do play-by-play. So,
yeah, it's
all worked out.
Yeah, I'm 56 years old, so when you mention the old cowboy himself, and first of all, for folks who aren't aware, if you just hear the American Sportsman theme song, you get goosebumps, right?
Yeah, it was the best. And it was only on, you know, kind of like reruns for me when I was a kid. But I knew right away, you know, I've been a fly fisher all my life and grew up in the outdoors. And so it was the ultimate outdoors show at the time. And I still think from a legacy standpoint, nothing's ever come close. I can remember Ted Williams in an episode with Kurt up in Nova Scotia somewhere skating dry flies for Atlantic Salmon, and it was just captivating, and so I set out. And you know, today I have Seasons on the Fly, which is a television show that airs on NBC Sports Network nationally,
right,
weekly. I do a big production on the Iditarod sled dog race every year, so.
Yeah, I'm gonna get to that because for a younger generation who might not be aware, Ted Williams was a unique triple threat. Not only a great hitter, a great fighter pilot, but he's one of the great fly fishermen that we've known, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, he's probably in the 50s, 60s, even the 70s was. I think there were a lot of brands that used him because of his fishing connections and not just his baseball connections, but yeah, he's one of the most well-known fly fishermen, I think, in the history of the country, and was one of the best and was a great tarpon fisherman and helped with like guys like Lefty Cray bring that to the American public and on how to catch those fish on the fly. So he was a great sportsman. Great sportsman.
I, from what I understand, he was pretty good at hitting a curveball. we continue with Greg Heister of the Pac-12 Network and more, be calling a Ducks Cougs. But so last Friday, you were here in the Valley, Gill Coliseum for Oregon State, UCLA, and to your right, Bill Walton. We are huge Big Red guys, and you know sometimes the game takes a back seat. I'm just curious. I mean, working with him, what kind of an experience is it calling a game with, let's face it, one of the most unique analysts we've ever seen?
Honestly, it was one of the most eclectic but beautiful experiences of my television career. This is exactly how it went. You always show up game day, you go to shoot arounds, and I'd never worked with Bill, so I went up to Bill at shoot around and introduced myself, and he put his hand out to shake my hand, but didn't really shake the hand. He looked at me. He kind of grunted, put his head down, and walked away. So I said, "Uh-oh." And honestly, he never really acknowledged me. There was no interaction between he and I prior to 3-2-1 go. When they taped the open, there was no rehearsal. It's just the way Bill likes to do things. We get to the first commercial breaks, and he turns to me and he says, "Hey, look. He says, nothing personal here. He says, I don't like any interaction with the play-by-play guy till we're on television. So I want everything spontaneous, and I don't want anything ruined. And so, and I was totally good because I was kind of, you know, aware of his eclecticism. And I had done some research and had listened to him do games before, so I kind of knew what I was in for. Second break, we go to break, and I'm like, Bill, you know, maybe we should talk about this, you know, the tempo of the game. And he says, no talking, only on television, only on television. And so he was real true to that the entire game. He did not want to talk about anything. He wanted everything completely spontaneous, which I found to be different, but also very refreshing because I'm kind of a off-the-cuff kind of guy myself. And so I think that Bill and I ended up hitting it off great, and he invited me to dinner at the end of the game, and we actually had great rapport, I think, and it was a blast. It was one of the funnest 2 hours in my career that I've had.
Who'd have thunk it? Improv college basketball broadcasting. That's awesome.
God, it was good. It was so good, though.
It is. We caught a little bit of it, but, well, he's obviously kind of like, eclectic seems like an understatement, but in your bio, and you mentioned it in passing, your involvement with the Iditarod in Alaska, and, you know, obviously being from near Buffalo, legendary for being one of the coldest places in the continental United States. How did you get that on your resume? Kind of what's your role and how does something like that even come about for you?
Well, my first job on air in television was in Anchorage, and I worked for a station there that was actually the official Iditarod station. They had some sort of local rights contract. So I started covering the event, and I covered it from start to finish and kind of fell in love with the event like day one. It is, in my opinion, the greatest event for a storyteller that we have in sports. And it goes across the most godforsaken country in the middle of the winter. These dogs are the most unique athletes on the planet. They run 125 miles a day. They'll eat 10,000 calories a day. And then you have a group of people, the really competitive ones, that if they were in the business world, they'd all be very, very wealthy. They have work ethics like nobody that you'd be around, and they've committed themselves to lifestyle rather than the pursuit of whatever it is that the rest of us are chasing. So, from a storytelling standpoint, it's a really unique event. I moved away, chased a career in other ways, and then an opportunity came up over a decade ago to get back involved with it, and they called me, and I've been out there. I've done, I think, right about 20 Iditarods now from start to finish, and it still captures my imagination and my creative juices get flowing for that like nothing else. It's hard to explain. I mean, from a storytelling standpoint, I mean, think about it. There's humans and dogs going across the Arctic in the middle of winter in a race. I mean, it's fantastic. We should all, in the sports world, we should all check it out. I mean, the month of March, obviously, when it comes to college basketball, there's nothing better, but I sacrificed that to be a part of this dog race.
Fascinating. We're talking many things with Greg Heister on Twitter, the handle @SeasonsOnTheFly. I mentioned you called the UCLA game. Last week we got to see Lonzo Ball up close and personal. You know, I mentioned you did play-by-play for Gonzaga. You know, you obviously cover this league. For a true freshman, with all you've seen, how much of a wow player is this young guy?
He's a wow factor from the moment that you see him. I don't, you know, through this entire run at Gonzaga, I've been around the program. They haven't had any player close to his ability. From a dynamic standpoint, from a versatility standpoint, certainly they've had better scorers and, you know, maybe defenders. But for the entire package, I haven't seen anybody like this. And I know a guy like Bill Walton certainly has seen more college basketball than I has been around, you know, great players for all of his 40 or 50 years. But, I mean, he's extremely impressed by Lonzo Ball. I think he's the best player in the league. You know, I know there's players that are scoring more and there's players that do other things better. But from an all-out versatility standpoint. Lonzo Ball's an amazing basketball player, and he makes everybody on his team better. And some of the things, like he had a dunk in that game against Oregon State that took you back to whenever that was, 89, 90, Duke in the Final Four, and the pass to Grant Hill.
Oh, right, right, the way up.
Yeah. And Lonzo had one of those type plays, but I think it was even better in that game where his whole body was almost under the backboard, and with his right hand he caught the ball, was able to secure it with his left hand and still flush it with both hands while his right shoulder was up under the backboard. So, just an amazing play. And you know, the thing about Lonzo is that he's kind of slight in build. I mean, he's not a big, strong-looking guy, and he's not overly imposing physically, but obviously God has gifted him some abilities that most on this planet don't get, and it's going to be fun to watch him and watch this team evolve throughout the season. And obviously Oregon, I think, is getting better too. The Pac-12 championship race down the stretch is going to get good as Arizona gets healthy.
Let's look ahead to Oregon and Washington State. I mean, you go back to Tony Bennett when the Cougs were a Sweet 16 team. They even had a winning record as recently as 2012. It got kind of bleak, but now year three, obviously an old friend of ours, Ernie Kent, 9-5. They've got one freshman in the mix, Malachi Flynn. They start four seniors. So when you look at this team, be it balance or experience, Greg, what pops? What do you like about this version of the Cougs?
Well, I like Malachi Flynn. I think he's a really good freshman for Ernie Kent. I think, and you know, the beauty of players like Malachi is that they're going to be in Pullman for 4 years.
Right.
And so I think we're going to really watch a really good college basketball player evolve over this time. And then, you know, he's got some pieces. This team is starting to gain some confidence. Physically, they're not going to be on the same page as an Oregon or UCLA or Arizona, but you know how this crazy game goes. You just got to keep it close enough and give yourself a chance to win in the last 3 or 4 minutes. And so I think that's what Washington State has to kind of grind down as this season goes on and see if they can continue to build that confidence piece. They're, you know, athletically, they're missing some pieces, and I think Ernie doesn't have all of his players in there yet. But it is a program that you start to, you know, at the beginning of this season, you're like, uh-oh, this thing's getting crooked early. But now, as they've opened up league play, you start to see a little more confidence starting to creep into this program, and the players starting to buy in a little bit more, and you start to see it evolve. So it'll be interesting, and it'll be interesting to see if Washington State can be one of those teams in the Pac-12 that comes up with some big wins and just, you know, creates kind of a burr in the saddle for a lot of the other teams trying to get to those top seeds and the upper echelon of the league.
Final thought for Greg Hyster. Obviously, this was an incredibly highly anticipated season for Oregon. You know, that loss they had to Baylor's now forgivable. They're on a roll now.
Sure.
Dylan Brooks is healthy. They got a little bit of a scare last night from Jordan Bell, but he's okay. A lot has come together. We now seeing a closer version of, you know, the team that had Duck fans buzzing heading into this season. What are you liking about this Oregon team?
Yeah, well, you know, look, we're typical fans, right? We're November 1 rolls around, and we expect somebody to be what they're going to be in March. I think what we saw last week from Oregon with the win against USC and then the win against UCLA, or vice versa, UCLA first and then USC, I think it speaks to the potential and the capability of this basketball program. And I think as the season goes along, what I love about Oregon is, you know, you can take all of the physicality aside and you can take all of the athletic ability aside. They have players like Dylan Brooks that has the courage to not shot, but to make the shot. And there's a big thing that. There's a lot of guys both in this and around the country that claim they certainly have the courage to take the shot, but it's a whole different level for the guy that's going to make it. And so that's what I love about Oregon, is that they're tough of mind and they're going to be a heart out every night. And I still think they're the favorite to win the Pac-12 as this season evolves. And I think once they get into the NCAA tournament, they're going to be as hard as anybody in the country to knock out because of players like that. So you know, as we go on down the road of college basketball, parity continues to grow and evolve, and these teams get closer and closer together in skill level, it's going to be these programs that are able to recruit players that have the courage to make the shot at the end of the game that's going to win it. Because, as you know, you get past the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, and all those games are close.
Right.
They're all going to come down to two or three possessions, maybe fewer. So if you have those players that you can give the ball to and say, okay, go score, get it to the player that can score the easy bucket, those are the teams that are going to get to the Final Four. And that's what I love about Oregon. Oregon has that, along with all the physicality that makes them, you know, one of the top elite teams in the country. I love Oregon's chances.
Well, we're going to use you as our inspirational model the rest of the way through. That's some great insight and information. He's Greg Hyster. He'll be calling the game on the Pac-12 Network this Saturday. We really appreciate your time. Follow him on Twitter. Use the handle @SeasonsOnTheFly. Hey, thanks so much for talking with us, Greg. We really appreciate your time.
Anytime. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. Have a great one.